Welcome to I See What You Mean, a podcast about how people get on the same page and stay there, or don't, or perhaps shouldn't. Today my guest is Douglas Cameron. Douglas co-founded and is president of Rapid Ratings International, a SaaS technology firm that provides information on the financial health of public and private companies around the world. Douglas, welcome to the show.
Hi, Stuart. It's great to be here.
Thanks. Tell me a little bit about yourself and Rapid Ratings.
Sure. As you mentioned in the kind intro, I'm co-founder, president, and head of product here at Rapid Ratings. And Rapid Ratings is a quantitative analytics firm that helps people in supply chain and third-party risk management understand each other better. So it's essentially, software that's designed to, generate empathy, transparency, and higher levels of communication between suppliers and their enterprise clients, or vendors and their enterprise clients. And in today's world, this has become a particularly interesting and relevant topic. Mm-hmm. Just as the issue of supply chain has become a household topic, as we've seen disruptions to that global supply chain due to COVID and other issues like the Suez Canal ship incident.
Right.
And in general, just people becoming more aware of these types of issues. So we work on helping to make people more functional in that role between, understanding a supplier and having a supplier better understood by its client. And we do that through the expression of a financial health rating, which helps them to understand their strengths and their weaknesses. And it helps people to mitigate and work through the problems associated with supply chain risk management.
That's a fascinating value proposition you've got there. And it seems to me like a niche that seems pretty unique to me. Tell me who your customers are.
Well, that's a really good question. So my customers are on both sides of the equation. So the enterprise client, so let's say, large manufacturing firms like, General Electric or General Dynamics or Raytheon or Nike, it could be anybody. These large firms that have sophisticated supply chains, mm-hmm. They have a basic need, which is they rely on their supply chain to provide goods and material on time and on specification.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of engineering work goes into ensuring that those products are correct to meet the needs of whatever the advanced product, the differentiated product they're trying to make is, whether it's a CAT scan or a jet engine or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And the supplier, is also a customer of mine. And I empathize as deeply with them as I do with the enterprise clients. But what they need is stability in their relationship with their client. And the opportunity to grow it, and a place to showcase their strengths and their capabilities. And so I'm really catering to both sides of the equation, mm-hmm. which is important, because what makes our risk analytics differentiated is that we're getting the information directly from the source. So we're not relying on elements that are, firmographic information or publicly available information. We're saying to that counterparty, to that supplier, you need to provide specific disclosures to us, which we will share on a confidential and secure basis with the client,
mm-hmm.
so that the two of you can have a better relationship, so that the two of you can communicate more efficiently with each other. And that ultimately provides a better solution for making sure that those goods and services are delivered on time and on specification, to the satisfaction of the manufacturing firm.
That's an intriguing angle to getting parties on the same page. If my financial condition is vulnerable in any way, shape, or form, it's not necessarily something I would want known. Now, I might be motivated to improve it, but I wouldn't necessarily want it known. And it seems that if I'm the source of your data, I'm giving you data about my operations, there's some risk there. So tell me if I'm not seeing that right, or how is it that you're getting on the same page with somebody who's going to provide you data that you're going to make public to really their customers?
Yeah. So the theory around it is that the supplier takes risk when it discloses information about itself to its customer.
Mm-hmm.
but I don't really believe that's the case. The part or the subcomponent or the whatever, if they're providing a logistical solution or a consulting service, whatever the case may be, the manufacturing firm, just in general, right, they have differentiated products, and that differentiated product requires differentiated supply chain. It requires them to be nimble and different. And sometimes some of those best solutions are going to come from smaller private firms. And their behavior is going to be more idiosyncratic versus systemic, you know, behaviors of much larger public firms. And we inherently understand that there is this difference. The supplier itself, yes, it could be very threatening if they were the only ones being evaluated this way.
Right.
You know, so out of a supply chain of 3,000 critical suppliers, if we were to focus on your firm, you know, with a rifle shot, then that would feel very exposing. But that's not the way risk management works. We're trying to understand this across the whole supply chain, across all 3,000. So you're not being singled out. You're part of a greater risk management project.
Interesting.
And if as the manufacturer, if I could understand that you have differentiated engineering capabilities, and part of what comes with that is that you're a smaller firm that's thinking about the problem differently, then I'm willing to take the risk that you are less stable financially. And as a matter of fact, I can help you to become more stable.
Right.
So, you know, if you get into trouble, don't tell me that you're in trouble when it's too late to help you. If you're in trouble, let me know now, because these larger manufacturing firms, they have the wherewithal to be able to assist. They can accelerate payments to you. They can assist in engineering challenges, which could reduce your cost of operations. They can buy commodities for you. Because the partnership already exists, they've already chosen you for usually a very specific engineering issue. The fact that you may be struggling is not a big surprise. And often it could be the struggle could be caused by that larger client. You know, they have they cut the order, you know, by 50% and say, well, I was expecting to produce 100 units for you, and now I'm only producing 50 units for you. That's going to hurt. And, you know, being able to make those types of disclosures and articulate them in a way that people can speak about them and resolve, you know, that issue is that's when risk management is working at its best.
Interesting. And that's where the transparency makes it work at its best, doesn't it?
That's exactly right. The transparency is in any relationship. Transparency is key. And then when you've got, you know, analytics that are highly accurate, that leads to intelligence. And so if you've got transparency and intelligence, you're on a good path for solving problems.
Interesting. What kinds of things do you get people on the same page about, and what does that mean to them?
So in the case of the underlying analytics that we provide, you know, if you're going to call out a strength, you know, what are those strengths and how should I understand them? So in the case of financial health, which is what our analytics are based around, you know, what is a financial strength and how am I meant to interpret it as a buyer of goods and services at a large manufacturing organization? I probably come up to an engineering background. You know, I understand the product really well, like whether it's a turbine blade or what have you. But I may not be financially trained. I may not be a financial engineer. So when I identify these strengths, they need to be contextualized in a way that I can manage them. And more importantly, is if a risk is identified, I need to understand that risk in a way that I can actually react to it. So you're taking a very complex idea, which is financial engineering, and you need to be able to reduce it down to things that are very easy for people to understand and interact with so that they can solution from them. So I view it as you know, we build analytics that construct a mosaic of the company in question and helps to identify strengths and weaknesses. But regardless, say you can look at the analytic and get a sense of the entire organization very quickly.
Well, and everybody, the whole point of this is to take some action. If there's a risk identified, if you assess it, reducing the complexity of the risk picture to things that are actionable is, I assume, is something that customers look to you and the analytics for. so they know what actions to take to. Okay.
Absolutely. So like this would lead to like the creation of, say, mitigation plans around risk. Right. So once risk has been identified, you know, then what you would do is construct a mitigation plan that would attempt to resolve the problem. And of course, the analytic needs to be sensitive enough to be able to provide early warning so that, you know, we can see the deterioration in a particular area and we can use that as a way to, you know, think about solutions that we have ample time to put into effect.
Right. Yeah, you'd want to be able to forecast some effects and put a solution in place.
That is the benefit of risk management, right? Is that you want to be you want to have enough foresight to be able to put solutions in place that are proactive as opposed to reactive.
Right. So are people getting on, and tell me who the people are. Are people getting on the same page? Do the data create a page for people to get on? Is maybe how I want to ask that question.
Yes, you know that's the accuracy element of the rating, right? If you take in the source derived data and you do a really good job of analyzing it and summarizing it in a way that removes bias, then it is easier for both parties to see that there is truth and information, and it allows the counterparty in question, the supplier, to react to it in a positive way, so that the conversation is starting off in a positive light, saying, you know, this is where we are in terms of our financial health, and this is the areas that we need to work on to make improvements. Because financial health is like anything else. I mean, companies are made up of people, and you know, it's the health of the company, and it's a reflection of the decisions that management is making. And sometimes those decisions are really complex, and navigating those waters are difficult. So if there's a reduction in revenue, why is that the case? Is it because of a loss of a client? Is it is there a portion of your market that's been negatively affected, or is it that your cost structure has gone up? Or are you having difficulty rationalizing an acquisition that you've made? Or is it a combination of all these factors?
Right.
So, you know, being able to describe that in such a way that it helps people to establish common ground and then make a plan about how they're going to solution for whatever the problem is at hand, you know, and in the case of the manufacturing firm, you know, they just want to make sure that those goods and services are coming in on time and on specification, that supply chain remains resilient. Mm-hmm. And stable. Mm-hmm. And they're willing to work with people to better understand that.
So interesting thing about getting on the same page is that we all are on our own pages. We sort of all are our own pages. We have a vantage point or a point of view on something. It comes from many things. It comes from our background, our training, role, responsibility, something we might be accountable for in a situation. It comes from, you know, we could have different personality characteristics, Myers-Briggs. There's a lot of things that could make up how we see a situation, how we would assess it, how we would size it up to decide what to do about it. And in a metaphorical way, that constitutes a page. To get on the same page, I think, requires creating that page. So in a way, picturing a Venn diagram, people's individual pages could overlap to create a same page they're getting on. It's often the case that people feel threatened to get on the same page because they feel like they have to get off of theirs or abandon theirs, leave it behind, something that they know, something they believe, something they feel strongly about. I'm guessing that the depth and sort of breadth of the analytics that you do addresses those things that I just described. Is that, would you agree, or do you see it differently?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, we've been able to construct a firm that is a product-led firm, you know, where we are empathizing with our client, which, as I described earlier, is really on both sides of the equation. It's the enterprise client and it's the supplier or vendor. Mm-hmm. Client, you know, to empathize in that way, it really requires you to dismantle sort of this traditional decision making, And it requires you to think about decision making, where that process includes a much larger, and much more diverse group of stakeholders. And you have to actually engage with them and listen to them, as opposed to sort of traditional decision making, where I might have a really good idea and I put that idea into effect. Now, when you have a broad group of people with diverse positions, that's going to create a complex environment. And that is, in fact, more difficult. That's true. But more difficult and more complex issues that you work through lead to better, more innovative products. And subsequently, you have, you know, a user experience for both the supplier and the enterprise that is more satisfying. And if both parties are satisfied through that process, then you have you contributed real value and solved, and you are well on your way to helping solve problems.
So that
approach to, you know, thinking about product and removing yourselves from bias, you know, is something that we work really hard to instill in not just our managers, but everyone inside of the firm. And having that deep empathy for our clients is a critical component of that.
You've mentioned empathy a few times. I want to come back to that. Bias is huge. I want to come back to that. Let me ask you one more question sort of on this line that I'm on, which is, it sounds like situations which could be contentious or even adversarial, relationships between a supplier and a customer, vendor and customer, that could be tense or adversarial. It sounds like what you're saying is that you see them sometimes become stronger relationships, improved relationships.
Absolutely.
More open, more of a partnership than just
absolutely.
Unload the truck.
Yeah, that's the key to it, is that, you know, there's benefits to both sides. You know, through, you know, better risk management, the manufacturing firms, they in fact get that resilience and that stability in their supply chain. They don't want to have to be reacting to issues that cause them supply chain delays. And then conversely, for the supplier, you know, they want to be able to maintain and grow that relationship. Revenue maintenance is and renewal, you know, is critical to to growing a business, and being able to expand your business, not just with your current client base, but with new prospects. That's the lifeblood of sure. For-profit businesses as we understand them.
Well, look, last comment on this, and then I'm going to get on to a couple of topics. It's well known that the interdependency between parties, like you're describing, is well known. We often, when we read about that, we hear about it, it can be a little conceptual. It's like, oh, okay, there's interdependencies between these parties in a supply chain and that leads to a value chain that delivers something to a customer. We understand there are interdependencies in there, but what it sounds like your product and your service do is effectively, respectfully help them manage the interdependencies. So it sounds like you're respecting those interdependencies, helping manage those interdependencies in a very constructive and productive way.
I think that, value chain, as you describe it, which I think is very apt, value chain, the idea that there are interdependencies pre-exists. It is an understood area. But the risk control area that we're speaking about here is financial health, and it's in that particular area which has been opaque prior to, you know, the solution that we've brought to the market. And so I think that it's really, think of it more like there are many pillars of relationship control that sit on top of a foundation, and that foundation is the financial health of a company. How well is it positioned to survive the trials and tribulations of just normal business? And then you layer on top of that, you know, event-based issues like pandemics or cyber issues. Like, how prepared am I to deal with those elements? That's a financial health question. And that That's true for individuals as well as corporations. What are the elements that are necessary to provide the stability and the ability to grow and grow efficiently?
But Douglas, when companies, my experience is, if a company was having a conversation with itself about its financial health that would be mostly internal. What you've done is externalize some of that, so that the conversation about financial health is in the relationship, and there's a mutuality, in respect of the interdependency between us, that your financial health affects me, my financial health affects you, and maybe you're giving people a platform to talk about that when that might never have been a conversation before.
That's correct.
Okay. So that's really an amazing value proposition for your customers that I don't think somebody hears when they hear the word financial health or risk analysis of financial conditions, right? That's just not where the mind goes first, but I see you guys driving it there for the benefit of all the parties.
That's
is
correct.
That accurate? Is that how the parties experience it when it works well?
Yeah, I think so. When it's working properly, I think that's correct.
That doesn't surprise me to hear you say that at all. And I think it could have been very hard, or still could be hard, to have that conversation without a third party. I think it could be really difficult for, especially as you mentioned, the large enterprises who have hundreds or thousands of suppliers in their supply chain system. They'd have to stand up an entire operation just to...
That's correct.
In the hope of starting an empathetic relationship with that many parties. Empathetic communication with that many parties.
That's correct. It's just too much to ask of any risk management group inside of a supply chain organization.
Yeah, it's not what they're in the business of. So
they need to be able to do it programmatically.
Yes.
And they need to be able to understand very quickly who's at risk and how they need to mitigate that risk and who is strengthened and how to leverage that.
Very cool. Very cool. So one of the questions that I think a lot about, what does it mean to be on the same page? I think here we have a unique example of getting on the same page of a relationship around the issue of financial health, and obviously the product being supplied. It's just you're in the business of supply chain risk management. But there's a relationship between parties that is strengthened by getting on the same page around I don't want to overstate it, but it seems to me a fair amount of this comes down to predictability. If both sides can predict with reasonable accuracy over a reasonable period of time, anything that could disrupt that, a lot of things can disrupt that, things that are within our control to disrupt that, or things that we could prepare for that are outside of our control, we're all better off if we do that. And somewhat in coordination, if not a full-blown collaboration, at least in some coordination.
Correct.
Yeah. So getting on the same page is about the predictability of the relationship, what they're in the business of together. The literature on bias and heuristics in decision making regarding risk management is vast and legendary. It's decades old. It's heavily grounded in as good research as scientists can make. You can Google bias in decision making and get millions of hits and read about dozens and dozens of dozens of biases and heuristics, decision making rules that people use, which sometimes introduce systematic bias. You mentioned removing bias a few times, and it seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems to me that the focus on data is one way, maybe the chief way, that you help remove bias in decision-making that could introduce errors in decision-making. Is that a fair statement?
It is. On the model development side, that's a key component to our approach is, working very hard to avoid those types of biases and letting the data speak for itself. That generates an output that is accurate and fair. And, that allows, people from moving from a place where it's generally negative, where they don't have enough information,
right,
and it's unclear, to something that's neutral, where now, through preparation and strong analytical work, people have they're in a neutral place, to then suddenly being able to go to a positive place because they've got now information that they can make, decisions with that enhance a relationship.
If you were trying to broker discussions between parties like you have without the data or as much data or as complete or accurate data, you would have to manage a great deal of bias that anybody comes to the conversation, they bring to the table, because we all have that in our minds. We're wired to make decisions using decision-making rules. Those are the heuristics. Sometimes they introduce systematic bias. That's what we refer to as bias. Humans operate that way. If you were the third party that you are without as much data, you'd be managing the biases in more of a analytic persuasion kind of way. And people resist changing their views on things. What do you find happens when folks are looking at data? Do you still see their biases emerge? And how do you overcome them? How do you use the data to address them? What do you see as the process of getting people on that same page with the data when part of the page they have to leave behind is maybe their own individual biases about something that the data contradict?
I mean, yeah, as I was referring to before, you know, financial statements and financial statement analysis, to me, is a reflection of the human condition, because what you're measuring are management decisions. You're looking, you know, you hire a new salesperson. You expect them to ramp up and be able to generate revenue after a certain amount of time. If they do, that's a good investment. So assets, you know, go down, cash is consumed, the hire is made. The expenditures are incurred as ramp up continues. And then if the training is successful and the hire was a good one, then revenue is generated because the salesperson has a territory and executes against that territory by building pipeline and converting that pipeline into paying customers. That can all be tracked through financial statements.
Mm-hmm.
So that decision saying we're going to hire a new salesperson, we can track all of that through that process. And you have a number of managers making a series of decisions,
right,
about how they manage their teams.
Right.
And so financial data provides us with enormous amounts of information that we can sift through, but it's complex, right? So the relationship between balance sheet and income statement and cash flow contributions, they vary industry by industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no such thing as what's the right amount of assets to leverage, for example, or what's the correct gross margin. It's going to vary industry by industry, and it's going to vary to a certain extent geography by geography.
Mm-hmm.
And being sensitive to those geographic differences, those industry differences, and being sensitive to size differences.
Mm-hmm.
Smaller companies can't operate the same way that large companies do. And so their behavior is different and needs to be understood because of that. And if you're willing to accept that, then you, that in and of itself is going to necessitate you to abandon a bunch of bias where you say, I think I know how, you know, a logistics firm should work. Well, let's look at the data and let's look at how a logistics firm operates in Germany versus how they operate in the United States versus how they operate in Japan. And let's think about that in the context of Brazil. And you, what we see emerging from the data is a picture. And we can then benchmark ourselves against that greater image of data and draw comparisons to it. And what that allows the supplier, but really anybody to say is, you know, yes, it is true, you know, that I'm struggling, but let me explain why
right.
I'm struggling in this particular area. And that's where you're moving from neutral to positive, because now I'm explaining something to you about my business. So, you know, this good thing happened to me or this bad thing happened to me. And as a manager, I'm reacting to that. And I've analyzed the problem. I've prepared our strategy and I'm executing on that strategy. And I'll explain that to you now. And that's moving into a really positive position, because now, you know, as a buyer of your services to whatever product that I have, I'm gaining an understanding of how you're going to mitigate the risk that
right.
could affect me in the future.
Right. That must be very eye-opening for a large enterprise that might have thousands of suppliers in its supply chain network or system, which are probably global in reach. to see the variations that you described by geography, by type of product, by size of company. It must be quite eye-opening to come to understand it's not a one size. They can't think about all their suppliers in one way.
True, but Lou, I can't also expect them to have that level of understanding of financial engineering. So the analytic itself distills that down into something that's much easier for them to consume. A rating is a good place to start. A Cardinal rating system, like a 0 to 100 scale, says, you know, this company is a 60 and in the prior period it was a 40. So there's improvement. That's something that's very easy for people to understand at a very high level.
Right.
If you can understand the methodology that we go into building out that analytic and you grow to trust it because we demonstrate high risk. And when you dig into it, you're like, yes, indeed, that is risk. Then as you build trust in the analytic, then you can rely more and more on the higher level ratings. And then, you know, dive deep with the counterparty with tools that we would provide them both that say, like, you know, given that this rating is X, you know, here are the underlying primary reasons for it, and provide people with enough information and context to be able to discuss it. If people can approach that conversation in a positive way, then the likelihood that they're going to have a positive resolution that might reflect itself in a mitigation plan is much greater because both parties are aligned. But they're pre-aligned anyway, right? We're just trying to facilitate that alignment. And the reason they're pre-aligned is that there already is a relationship there. The supplier is already providing a critical part to the subassembly or a direct component into this end product. And we're trying to help facilitate the decision to work together that pre-existed. And help smooth over differences of opinion and make this portion more clear.
But what you help them achieve is a far greater type of alignment, which is built as I see what you mean, but on shared knowledge. So they increase the shared knowledge, the knowledge shared between them, the information, and then the knowledge of that information, what that means, the explanations you mentioned, the rationales, the whys. Shared knowledge and shared intent. When parties have shared knowledge and shared intent, they've got, I would consider that a much greater form of alignment that to me describes more collaboration. One of the definitions of collaboration I like is that parties who are collaborating are sharing risk and reward. There's one model I use. There's four levels of working together. Networking, cooperation, coordination, and collaboration. I hear you saying you are able, when this goes well, to get the conversation to that level.
Yep. And I would argue that is exactly the an ideal relationship between a supplier and an enterprise buyer. They're sharing both in the risk and the reward.
That's pretty amazing, Douglas. That's pretty amazing. What happens when some of these parties that you work with can't quite get there the way we've discussed it? What happens when they can't get on the same page or it's going to be a slower process to get them there? You want to try to preserve some respect in the relationship and see if you can deal with differences constructively. What's that look like in the work you do?
Well, it's easier for me to comment on that on like the way that we would manage like our own teams. Ultimately, that the decision to continue the relationship in the work that we do with our clients, both the enterprise client and the supplier, that, you know, if there's a logical breaking point or they feel like mitigation can't be achieved, then, you know, we have done our job getting to people to that point.
Right. Right.
You know, that we don't actually need to help them to take that further. So in the process of collecting information, if the supplier refuses to comply with the program, which is quite rare, but if they do refuse and we've left no stone unturned in terms of explaining to them the value and helping them understand that they're not being singled out, et cetera, you know, once we report back to the enterprise client that we've done everything we can, then, you know, they're designated as high risk inside of the risk management program, you know, right. Because they're unwilling to make the disclosure.
And that's a legitimate outcome. If
that is a legitimate outcome, and it is reasonable, you know, that it may lead to the termination of the arrangement. And both parties might be satisfied with that.
Right.
That may be an adequate outcome. But again, it's following a process that's well understood by all parties. You know, because our approach is systematic in this way, we know that we've done all the correct things in order to be able to say to the enterprise client that, you know, this counterparty is not going to be compliant with your program. That would be an example, but how they choose to react to that depends on the stance that they have on this risk control area.
I'm just always curious in how, if you can't get on the same page, where might it end? Where might it be left, and what could happen after that?
I would argue that there are probably other reasons in addition to the financial health component that is leading to the deterioration of that relationship. Products could be sunsetting, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good one where the supplier in question is like, look, I can already predict where this is going.
Mm-hmm.
The products that I'm related to are sunsetting in the next 2 to 3 years. And through that deprecation process, your reliance on me is going to become less. So the relationship between us is already skewed against me. And I may choose not to participate in your program because I don't think that I'm going to be, there's not as much value in it
right.
for me because I'm not going to achieve anything
right.
through the process of going through this risk management assessment.
Right, right.
That I can understand how that could happen. Does that leave the relationship in such a way that they can't work in the future? I don't think that it is damaged through that in such a way that they can't work together
right,
again.
Right.
And as if anything, it's going to establish what the criteria to work together is in the future. So
right.
when they do re-engage on a new initiative, there will be a financial disclosure because that's a part of the process that they go through to, you know, validate the procurement process. Because at the end of the day, that enterprise client is transferring brand over to that supplier. If the supplier doesn't provide the goods and services mm-hmm. on time and on specification, it could disrupt the supply chain and disrupt the end customer to the detriment of the brand of the enterprise client. So, you know, it's not an unreasonable request. And I think, you know, recent history has demonstrated the need for better collaboration and better understanding in value chain and supply chain in general, because we're all interrelated. We're all interdependent.
The pandemic certainly taught us that lesson. So tell me about the way your teams work to implement this innovative approach.
You know, I think that the way that, you know, driving towards creating products that are transformational like this, it requires, you know, a staff, you know, where, you know, we try really hard to promote ideas like common sense and having an optimistic disposition and being energetic and loyal, you know, and a willingness to take risk and be determined. And, you know, in the process of doing that, you know, we want people to be entering into conflict that may arise,
yes.
you know, with
yes.
positivity and positive energy, because it's a lot, people may, you know, we want to encourage ideas that help us to make our products more impactful to our clients. In order to do that, we really want to encourage, you know, people to come to discussions that may be contentious, you know, prepared,
right.
Willing to empathize with each other and listen, and, you know, make modest incremental steps so that you have agreements, next steps, and you can move through issues. You know, that to me is a very agile approach to problem solving, and it reflects, I think, really positively on our product. You know, empathy with each other is critical, And I think those characteristics are some of the key ones to establishing empathy. And the more empathetic we can be of each other, the easier it is for us to be empathetic to our clients, both the enterprise and the supplier side. And it helps us to provide better solutions for them.
Well, this is fascinating. Words like common sense, loyal, positivity, optimistic. If I was told folks going to interview Douglas on financial risk management and health, those words wouldn't have come up. I would think your customers get out of working with you exactly what the kinds of things we've described that had to do with relationship, that had to do with respect, empathy, and the things that make for a strong relationship on the foundation of financial analysis, analysis of financial risk, understanding and working on conditions of financial health. I think it's a fascinating leap you've made, or maybe it's just a really smart step you've made from something that might have nothing to do with such human emotions and human, as you said earlier, the human condition, but you've tied it together. And my guess is your clients have that experience.
That's really what we endeavor to. You know, it's a journey, but we continue to work down that path.
Douglas, thank you for joining. I had a lot of fun. I learned a lot.
That's great. I appreciate the opportunity, and thanks for the probing questions.
And that's how we see it, my friends. I want to thank Douglas for recording today's episode with me. Send questions and suggestions through the app. Subscribe and give me a 5-star rating, unless you can't, in which case, tell me why. And join me next week when we take another look at how to get on the same page and stay there, unless we shouldn't.